Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Abbott Elementary, ABC's new mockumentary-style comedy effort, goes forward tomorrow night. Executive producers Justin Halpern and Patrick Schumacher join me next in an internet radio exclusive. Also ahead, The Boys Go Tune, Fear the Walking Dead goes another AMC season, TV critics go nominating, our classic trivia question, and how to build back bowls, that's college football bowl games, better. Got two ideas how. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and Tuner Radio. I present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal, and Reason. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Find out how you can get a subscription that for the first 3 months is only $5.95 a month. Great discount. With the details, audibletrial.com/televised. And more details about all that later in our program. Great to have you with us on this Monday afternoon, December 2021, for the program about TV's current and future. 58 degrees throughout the hour here in New York. Wonderful people coming your way in the hour ahead. And we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Interact with our guests by picking up the phone and using this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. Shy about the phone? No problem. Use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. That's the room key. And you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So either way, phone or chat room, we get you involved. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk, Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions in live with you. Executive producers from Abbott Elementary, premiering tomorrow on ABC, join us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. Amazon is out to make 2022 a big year for its Emmy-nominated superhero saga, The Boys. With at least one live-action offshoot series set to reach viewers next year, there will be an 8-episode animated one known as Diabolical. It will be an anthology in format and be overseen by The Boys showrunner, Eric Kripke. Nominations for the 2022 Critics' Choice TV Awards came out this afternoon. Succession from HBO leads the pack with 8 nominations, followed by Mayor of Easttown and Evil from Paramount Plus, formerly CBS, with 5 each. HBO came in first among streaming services with 20 nominations, with Netflix second with 18 and Hulu third with 11. The CW and TBS will simulcast the Critics' Choice ceremony from Los Angeles on January 9th. Fear the Walking Dead will be back for an 8th season on AMC next year. Meantime, Mothership The Walking Dead is set to wrap its long run on AMC before 2022 concludes. And another spinoff, weekly anthology Tales of the Walking Dead, will arrive next summer. Now quickies, Shang-Chi film adapter Destin Daniel Cretton will develop new series for Disney Plus and Onyx Collective under a new management studio with Marvel Studios. John Wick creator Derek Kolstad has a new TV project in play, Battle Chasers. Kolstad will base the series on the popular comic book. TMZ will offer a primetime Mary Elfin special, celebrity-oriented, of course, on Fox December 23rd. And actress Valerie Bertinelli will extend her Food Network relationship, covering new episodes of Kids Baking Championship and Valerie's Home Cooking, as well as new series in the near and far future. And that is news notes for today. Over the decades, ABC has built up a sterling reputation for comedies that deal with the schoolroom in very unique ways. In the 1960s and early 70s, it was Room 222. In the 1980s, it was Head of the Class, whose remake started a few months ago on HBO Max and is already set to go for a second season. By the way, we had the executive producer of Head of the Class on our show several months ago. You can catch that episode on our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, as well as our podcast destinations. Well, tomorrow night, another show goes into that schoolroom genre. It's called Abbott Elementary. It takes place in a Philadelphia public school, and it's created and produced by a marvelous new talent named Quinta Brunson. Joining us live to talk about the series are two other key executive producers of the series from Los Angeles, Justin Halpern and Patrick Schumacher. Justin, Patrick, happy to have you with us.
Hi.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
It is a pleasure. And Justin, we'll start with you. What's very interesting about your series is that you're taking the mockumentary approach that was so well done for Modern Family, for The Office, for Parks and Recreation. Why take that format?
Well, I sort of feel like, you know, when Quinta came and pitched us this show, it seemed like, you know, in a lot of other mockumentary shows, no one would actually make a documentary about those subjects, you know? And this felt like such a natural thing. Like, there are documentaries about the public school system and its failings, and it just felt like this was such a kind of no-brainer, and Quinta really loved, you know, she comes from the, you know, loving The Office, loving Parks and Rec, and so this just felt like tonally it would be the right move.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, how did Quinta come up with the idea for the series?
It was actually a very personal story. Her mother was an elementary school teacher in the Philadelphia school district, and she had been kicking around this idea for quite some time. There was an anecdote that she told us when she met with us about this several years ago, pitching it to us as an animated idea, actually, because we had been working on this Harley Quinn show for for HBO Max, and Quinta's, you know, schedule kind of only allowed for an animated show at that point. But she had told us this anecdote just about a parent-teacher night when she was in town in Philadelphia visiting her mother, and her mother was, having to stay extremely late waiting for some late parents whose jobs were keeping them, just late into the night, and how her mother sort of dealt with those hardships with such grace, as frustrating as it was to a younger Quinta, dealing with this, but, her mother had been doing this for decades, and this was just the nature of the job, and, you know, it was sort of a very grounded expression of teachers as heroes, you know, like it was just a very real sort of real-life hero kind of example, and so she wanted to do a show that was kind of a tribute to her mother and a tribute to teachers as unsung heroes, so she came to us with this project several years ago, as I said, as an animated show, and one thing led to another. We couldn't quite make it work then for our schedules, but then, a couple of years ago at this point, I ran into her on the lot, and she happened to need a ride home, and on the ride home, I was like, hey, what do you think about turning that show into a live-action thing? And she was like, you know what, I think I might have the bandwidth for that, and then we start, you know, kicking around ideas. So that's sort of the inception of that. But it started with, as all good pitches do, with a very personal anecdote.
You know, Justin, ABC came out with a behind-the-scenes look at this series, which premieres tomorrow night. And one of the fascinating things about that clip was that many of the cast members also, like Quinta, have personal connections to school teachers, either being taught under them or they know people in their lives who are teachers. Did you expect that?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of hoped that would be the case, right? Like, you make a show and you hope that it has, like, a point of connection for people, you know. And so I think, like, one of the things is, like, everybody, when you're coming up with sort of, like, a network show, you want to have this, like, broad, this ability to have a broad appeal. And it's, like, everyone's been to school. Everyone has teachers that they remember for whatever reason, either like idiosyncratic reasons that, you know, or that they were moved by that teacher. And so I was kind of secretly hoping anyone who watches the show would be like, oh yeah, this is, reminds me of this teacher that I had or that teacher that I had. And it kind of like puts you back in that space and allows you kind of an access point into the show.
And Patrick, I believe some of the cast members, like Cheryl Lee Ralph and Lisa Ann Walter, they even went further because either members of their family were teachers or the experience of school, no matter where it was so powerful, so passionate, so engaging that it really helped them bring their characters to life.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they've drawn from their reality with their performances, you know, throughout from the get-go. Especially somebody like Cheryl, who had such a sort of instant command, walking into a room, the kids just kind of like snap to. She just has this sort of like innate kind of authority figure within her. Same thing with Lisa. But, I enjoyed coming into this project because I had a very different sort of educational experience. I went to like an all boys Catholic school. It's very like Dead Poets Society, and like that was my sort of access point to early education. And this was just exciting to me because, you know, it was kind of, it was a new world to me. One that, like, Justin had a little bit more of an experience with personally, but, yeah, it just, it was a story that felt like it needed to be told, and something that was exciting to me as kind of an outsider.
Mm-hmm. Abbott Elementary is ABC's new workplace comedy taking place at Philadelphia Public School. The premiere is tomorrow night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time and Pacific on your local ABC station, and then it will come back in January for its full run. We have two of the key executive producers of the program. That's Justin Halpern and Patrick Schumacher. They're live with us from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We're happy you are, too, as well. Simon Halpern with you live from New York. 59 degrees, the top of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for our guests, make the phone ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming your way Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, what's the state of children's television going into next year? And where is it going to go? What directions are popping up? We'll talk to an expert on the subject. Her name is Dr. Lucille Burbank. She also is the author of a new book called The Inside Search of Sesame Street. And we'll find out what that book frames her opinion about the world of children's television. Dr. Lucille Burbank from the Inside Secrets of Sesame Street, that's Friday, among our guests, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Justin, when you had to make the move from being animated to live action, how did that shift the game plan in terms of either the stories you wanted to cover or the way you wanted to produce the series?
Well, I think like in animation, we produce another animated show for HBO Max, and it's like very violent, and you know, you can kind of like the scope gets instantly kind of as large as you want it to be. Like, you can be sending people to another planet, you could be, you know. So, I think we always, even when it was animated, even when we think about the shows animated, it was still going to be like kind of grounded, this sort of like in the King of the Hill kind of way, where it's like it does abide by, you know, the laws of nature in a way, but. You know, I think once we decided that it was going to be live action, I think we leaned into kind of the reality of it. Like, we wanted it to feel very, like, lived in and grounded and real. And, like, some of my favorite moments are, like, you know, if you have, in real life, if you have an awkward interaction with someone or there's somebody you can't stand, you might have, like, an exchange with them, and then you might look to someone else and be like, did you just hear this guy? Like, and so I feel like this show allows us to do that, to sort of, like, allow the audience to be in on the relationships in a way that even the characters in the show are not.
Mm. Patrick, what does the mockumentary format do for both of you as producers, but also for the viewer? It seems that when you see a show like Modern Family or The Office or Parks and Recreation, it seems to me, at least, it allows the vignette approach, where rather than have, like, one plot that goes through the entire show and builds and builds and builds and builds and so forth, you're able to do vignettes, little incidents, if you will, throughout, which sort of give the show more of a sketch feel.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think as producers, you know, and storytellers, it allows you the ability to condense a lot of story, first off. I think it allows you to sort of, you know, execute exposition and pipe and that sort of thing in a really kind of efficient but organic way. You can do, like, info dumps but still make them engaging. I think it also allows you to show sort of the, you know, multiple sides of characters that are, you know, both sides being honest takes, but it's like here we have a show that's dealing with, you know, adult teachers with adult lives having to go in and sort of put on their game face when they are, you know, leaders and educators and almost parents to these little kids in elementary school, and therefore, you know, they are kind of two-faced, but not in a, you know, in a bad way, no you know, sort of derogatory meaning behind that. They just have to, you know, play kind of a character in front of these kids, and then you get your, you know, with these talking heads, or, you know, these little looks to camera and that sort of thing, you're getting sort of more of their, you know, their id and their kind of like inner, you know, personalities coming out in a really efficient way. And I also think for like audiences, it helps make it feel all like that much more immediate, that much more kind of grounded. You know, we partnered with Randall Einhorn. He directed our pilot. He's an executive producer on the show and was the producing director on the show. Ended up directing about half of the episodes himself and was just there on set every day, kind of keeping things consistent. But he comes from The Office. He was the original director of photography on The Office. He directed a ton of episodes of The Office. And he kind of developed, you know, that language for that show that kind of carried forth into this show as well, and just sort of his theories on this kind of filmmaking and doing everything with three cameras and the camera kind of acting, you know, as another character and, you know, moving and finding things that we want to focus on. I think that format, you know, it's so vastly different from like the multicam, let's say, where we got our start, you know, where you're able to tell jokes kind of silently, right? It's in a way it's more purely cinematic, and I think those that sort of brings like an immediacy and a groundedness and a reality to it all that people appreciate and helps, you know, that grounding and reality just to me makes everything all the funnier. You know, when you do integrate jokes, they feel real, and I think it like helps elicit those belly laughs because it's coming from like a real emotional place. So,
yeah.
it's
sort of twofold. Yeah. Justin, for either one of you, how did Quinta work with the writing team to shape the vision of this show? Because one of the things also about mockumentaries is that you're able to have an off-guard feeling. You feel like you're being the insider. You, the viewer, is the insider on the situation, and you're able to catch these people off guard or off their guard. So I'm wondering, you know, as Quinta was working with both of you and Randall and the writing team to sort of shape the vision of the show, what kind of things went through everybody's mind?
You know, I think for us, Quinta was just, hey, she wrote the pilot. We helped her kind of like break the pilot and kind of shape the idea, but she really knew what she wanted. She was very, very dialed into this, to what she wanted, and she was, you know, she stars in the show, but we probably wrote for 10 weeks with all the writers before we started shooting any episodes, and then we continued to write. So Quinta was in the room every single day for the first 10 weeks of the writer's room. And I think for us as executive producers, like, if we write our own show, like, you know, then it's our voice. We're trying to, you know, say something with the show that we want to say, and we kind of take the reins. But when we're producing somebody else's show, the goal is to help them get whatever is in their head out onto screen. And so in a great way, Quinta knew exactly what she wanted. So it was really easy for us to be like, okay, well, you could go this way, you could go this way, you could watch out for this, watch out for that. And we kind of just acted kind of like a lead blocker in football. We were like, all right, we're gonna set the block, and then you run through the hole.
Mm-hmm. Incidentally, in addition to Quinta, some of the cast members on Abbott Elementary, which begins tomorrow night at 9:30 Eastern Pacific Time on your local ABC station, includes Tyler James Williams, Janelle James, Chris Peretti, Lisa Ann Walter, and one of my favorite dream girls of all time, Cheryl Lee Ralph, and the role of Barbara Howard. Again, Abbott Elementary begins tomorrow on ABC, and then we'll come back for a full run on the network on, January 6th. That's right, January 6th. Oh, and that will be, by the way, at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. That will be the regular time period for that series. Justin Halpern and Patrick Schumacher, two of the chief executive producers of the series, they're with us live in Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. And if you have a question or comment for them in our remaining minutes with them, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up Christmas week, we'll be with you for another triple header. That's going to be Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, December 20th. 22nd, 23rd. No 24th show because that's Christmas Eve. We'll try to bring you some of the new shows coming up in early January. We'll also try to have some leading TV people talk about their favorite shows of this year and where they see next year going in the world of the tube. That's all coming up Christmas week, December 20th, 22nd, 23rd, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Another triple header week coming your way right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's it like for both of you to work in sort of a three-headed situation? You've got your creator, who's also your star and executive producer along, that's Quinta. But you also have two studios that are working with you. You got Warner Brothers, and you have Disney through 20th Television. So what's it like when you have this sort of three-headed trimobate, which is a very rare thing in TV to have?
Well, usually it's hell, but in this case, I feel like everyone was really supportive of the show and also Quinta did have such, like, a distinct vision for it that she could kind of, like, swat away anything that she didn't like because she knew what she wanted it to be, and they were really respectful of that, which was, I don't know, I felt like...
If I could use a football metaphor, it's like running a wishbone office. No, that's all we want to do is football metaphor. No, it was great. I mean, Justin and I came into this with Quinta, you know, thinking the best role for us is to be a facilitator. This is her vision. You know, we try and be as egoless as we can with this. And, you know, it is her story. And we're just here to try and help her kind of, you know, show her the ropes, help her navigate any sort of, like, pitfalls that may come about in this process of doing, like, a broadcast show. And, like, in terms of just to answer your question about working with two different studios, I mean, that's kind of the name of the game now, especially, like, working at an independent studio like Warner Brothers, is that, you know, co-productions happen more often than they did earlier in our careers. And, you know, but there's always a studio that kind of takes the lead on it. And, you know, because our deal is with Warner Brothers and, you know, they originated the project, you know, we mostly deal with the Warner Brothers executives. The 20th executives are also involved, but, you know, they sort of, you know, they're on every call and they sort of weigh in. But Warner Brothers is sort of our point people, essentially. Mm-hmm. But they're all involved. It's just they try and sort of streamline the process by you know, having the Warner Brothers executives be our point people.
Did either of you or your team try to get a writer who had experience, aside from Quinta, with the Philadelphia school system, or maybe get an education consultant from that area to join you in assisting on the show?
There are some people from products of the Philadelphia public school system on the, that are on the writing staff, and there are several people on staff who either their mothers were teachers or they have siblings that are teachers. I mean, almost everyone had something like that.
Yeah.
There was nobody on staff who had been a, like, public school teacher, but we were constantly kind of, like, mining and asking for real stories. We met with, like, school board members at one point. We did, like,
yeah, chief operating officer of a public school system. Yeah, which, I mean, episodes were, you know, storylines were directly born from those conversations.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier past efforts by ABC to showcase the school system in some way. Route 222, which I think was one of the great groundbreaking shows of the late 60s and early 70s on any network, as well as Head of the Class, which has just been revived by HBO Max and doing very well. His first season's already been renewed for a second. Did either of those two shows or other shows that have dealt elsewhere with the school system, were they influences on the scripts or on how the show was directed or on how Quinta portrayed her teacher?
You know, it's hard to say. Like, I think, like, she took a lot of inspiration from her favorite shows. And I think
The Office and Parks and Rec were always brought up for obvious reasons and also just, like, tonal reasons as well.
And also, like, she loves, like, 90s sitcoms, you know? Like, she loves Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and Family Matters and, like, just all these 90s sitcoms. And she's kind of a sitcom junkie. And so I feel like that stuff was really baked into what we did on the show because I think she loved those rhythms so much.
Yeah, she has kind of an encyclopedic knowledge of a certain era of broadcast comedies, which is great because, you know, she sort of knows the tropes, and she knows that she doesn't want to, like, repeat them exactly, but also understands that there is sort of a built-in, you know, structure to these things. So, you know, Quinta came into this with a real advantage and kind of a shocking amount of just experience without having worked in this capacity. Like, I told her so many times, like, you came into this job with sort of the composure and poise of a showrunner who's been doing this for, like, 20 years. But 20 years ago, you were, like, a baby. So, yeah, she was really impressive.
You know, it's interesting. We're almost done, but I think we have to ask it. What was it like working with the kids?
Chaos. I mean, we had our poor first ADs on the show. you know, they were the ones who had kind of the brunt of the work. But, you know, every day almost we were working with like anywhere from like 30 to 60 kids. And it was the chaos that you might expect. I mean, what was nice was that, you know, all of our cast was really able to develop a relationship with these kids, and the kids kind of treated them, I mean, some of them probably thought that these cast members were teachers, and they sort of did snap to attention when our actors would try and, you know, they were the ones who were the most effective at getting the kids to sort of fall in line and, like, do their jobs as actors, because most of the kids that we cast in the show weren't professional actors, and we kind of wanted that, like, raw energy. But yeah, there were days when it got a little testy, where it was like, you know, we hadn't gotten the shot and the kids were going to go pumpkin, as they say, because, you know, they have a much shorter sort of allowance of work hours that we can actually work them. And so, you know, it's 3 minutes to go before they go pumpkin. We don't have the shot. And it's like, everybody's like running around, like fall in line, you know, please, like begging them to stop yelling and jumping around so we can get this shot. And it's like the kids don't care about meal penalties. So cool kids do. Yeah, the ones who have their agents on speed dial.
The future line producers.
That's right, yeah. So, you know, it could be chaotic. But it was really sweet, and it was really impressive watching the cast work with them and sort of treat them like they're their own children. And also, I think Randall Einhorn, our executive producer and director, put it best when he was like, you know, it's harder, but it makes it that much better. And like that was, I thought, so true, that it was like within that chaos, you end up with some like really brilliant stuff that you can't, you know, you wouldn't see if you didn't have that chaos. So it led to better things, as sort of as much of a headache as it could be for certain people on our production.
Mm. When all is said and done, what do you hope the audience takes away from Abbott Elementary?
I hope they laugh. I hope they think it's funny first and foremost. That was also Quinta's, like, big thing, and ours too, is, like, we want to make sure people laugh and find it funny,
yeah.
First and foremost.
Yeah, I hope they laugh. I hope they're inspired by these characters, because I do think that these characters, you know, they are all based in some way, shape, or form on real people. And that, you know, they are inspiring, and that, you know, despite, you know, resources being limited, you know, in anyone's job, really, you are still able to do an amazing job and see things through. And you know, if you come at things with, you know, the best intentions, that, you know, you can still, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and achieve, you know, what you set out to do. And yeah, I hope that it sheds light on, you know, issues that do exist within our school system in America, but that it, you know, we're not coming away from it feeling hopeless.
Mm-hmm. The first episode of ABC's new workplace school place comedy, Abbott Elementary, is tomorrow night, 9:30 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on your local ABC station. And then it goes into a regular run on Tuesday, January 4th at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time, right before the final season episodes of Black-ish. That's all coming up on your local ABC station. Check your local where ABC is available in your area. And for more details about the program and the series online, go to abc.com. That's abc.com. Abbott Elementary begins tomorrow night on your local ABC station, 9:30 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Justin Halpern, Patrick Schumacher, thank you both very much for joining us this half hour, and congratulations to you and Keith and everybody involved for making this show happen. And if luck continues with the great track record ABC has had with shows like Room 222 and Head of the Class, you got a long, great run in store for you.
Thank you so much.
You're very, very welcome. Take care. Enjoy the week.
You as well.
Justin Halpern and Patrick Schumacher from Abbott Elementary joining us live from Los Angeles. When we come back, our classic trivia question of the week, we'll also have an update on Donald Trump's proposed mega content network, TMTG+. You might be surprised in terms of what's happening there. And I'll also have a comment about college football bowl season, why right now it's not really great, and why it can be much, much better. And I got two ideas to make it happen, one for the short term and one for the long term. We'll get to all of that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 65 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, tomorrow and every weekday morning, it's Kings in the Morning. Join Jay King and his crew for great conversation, music, and a whole lot more. Kings in the Morning, tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, every weekday, here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best of BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Where else? Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised for this Monday afternoon, the 6th of December, 2021. Tom and I am with you live from New York. 57 degrees at the bottom of the hour. We have more coming your way, and including our classic trivia question of the week, my commentary about how to build back bowls, as in college football bowl season, better, and our up segment about Donald Trump's mega content enterprise, TMTG+. We'll get to all that after we pause with some words from our great sponsor, Audible.com. You know, one of the great writers who always provides thrilling stories of all kinds is David Baldacci. He's got a brand new audiobook out called Mercy. It's a missing persons case that will keep you in suspense. Well, that could be one of the books you get as a result of a trial run with Audible.com. And in case you haven't heard, if you just want to forget the trial run but go right ahead and subscribe, well, it's a great offer for you. Your first 3 months are $5.95 a month. You save a lot on the major price. $5.95 a month for your first 3 months, and you get a $20 credit as well. So for all details, go to audibletrial.com/televised. And you can also, of course, if you don't want to go for the trial subscription off the bat, go with trial run, 1 month trial of the service. In case you haven't heard, audible.com is the leading provider by far of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, inspiration. More than 250,000 titles to choose from. And the best part is you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now. It's Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, and our various podcasts. So just sign up on audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. You get one free audio book, that 1 month trial, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and while the supply lasts, important health and wellness information. Better yet, if you're already an Amazon Prime member, you get two audio books for your trial of one, and one of those books can come from the fast-growing catalog of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio productions and podcast series, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, regional theater, great one-woman and one-man performances. And again, if you want to go right ahead and subscribe, your first 3 months, while the time lasts, $5.95 a month. You save, and you save a lot, plus get a $20 credit for the rest of your subscription. That's audibletrial.com/televised to find out all that great info and more. And remember, audible.com makes a great gift for you or someone you love this holiday season. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week, second week in a row that we're offering it. If you have the answer and you email it and it's correct, you will win four great prizes. Two of them are books. The unofficial Hocus Pocus cookbook, based on the popular 1990s movie with Bette Midler, who is recreating her role for a new sequel to that film that will be on Disney Plus around this time next year. And Betty White, 100 Remarkable Moments in Extraordinary Life, fantastic coffee table book about one of the most amazing TV personalities ever, still with us. I believe next year she crosses the big 100, everything willing. Ray Richmond, the author of that book, wonderful reporter for The Hollywood Reporter and Deadline Hollywood Daily, all those great places. He was with us about a month or so ago to talk about the book. And we hope to have him back, by the way, in the near future, talk about where he sees TV going in 2022. Also, we have a Freak Brothers T-shirt based on the popular new series, The Animated Tune on Tubi, the multi-channel bundle owned by Fox. And from the Loud House, very popular cartoons here at Nickelodeon, a wonderful crayon set. All four prizes could be yours if you know the answer to this question. Raymond Burr was the first actor to play the famed lawyer Perry Mason on a CBS television series. Who was the second? Raymond Burr was the first actor to play Perry Mason on a CBS television series. Who was the second? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember, enclose your name and your mailing address with that email. If you're first with the correct answer, you win all four prizes. And if we don't get a winner by the end today, as always, we'll post the question tomorrow on Facebook and on Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. Remember, in order to win, play it in. And, of course, all the very best. Well, yesterday we found out the top four teams of college football who will be battling it out in the college football playoff this year. Alabama number one, Michigan number two, number three Georgia, number four Cincinnati. Of course, the playoff semifinal style will be on New Year's Eve on ESPN, and then about a week and a half, 2 weeks later, the college football championship with the winner of those two games battling it out. Unfortunately, on your way to not only those games, but other matchups that they call the New Year's Six that'll be on both New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, what do you got to get through? Well, you got to get through a lot of bowl games that, frankly, don't make sense and, frankly, are boring and, most importantly, involve teams who don't deserve the opportunity to be in a bowl game. You know, I've always felt that when you play in the regular season, the bowl game is your reward for having a great season. It's not a reward for barely passing. It's not a reward for breaking even. It's not an award for having a losing record. It's an award for having a winning record, a good winning record. But unfortunately, in recent years, since the college football regular season went to a 12-game season, we've had too many 7-5 teams, 6-6 teams, and even 5-7 teams, that's right, winning 5, losing 7, in bowl games. And these bowl games, frankly, don't get an audience. ESPN never says how many people they have. I'll bet you it's probably a million, maybe a million and a half tops, if that. And frankly, these games are not worth your watching, even with the sponsors that are that get the naming rights to the games. Well, I have two suggestions to transform that whole situation. And here is the first. Number one, given that we have 12 games, figure that 8 games would mean that you win 3/4 of your games. So I think the NCAA should establish, starting next season, a rule, hard and fast. You win 8 games, you're in. You don't win 8 games, no bowl game. Doesn't matter like what standing you end up in with your conference, no bowl game if you don't get 8 wins. 7-5 doesn't cut it, 6-6 doesn't cut it, 5-7 doesn't cut it. That way, if you have at teams with at least an 8-4 record, you know you're going to get pretty good games, as opposed to games that have crazy matchups, or games that feature teams that don't deserve to be in a bowl game. So I'd like to see the NCAA kick off a new rule starting next year, next season, that you win 8 games, you're in a bowl game. You don't win 8 games, out, no matter what. Out, 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 out. Doesn't matter what team you're in. Doesn't matter what conference you're in. Doesn't matter what kind of status you have. You don't win 8 games, you don't get in. It's time that college football realizes that bowl games are a reward. They're not an automatic. And it's time, and maybe that way we'll cut down on the number of bowl games that really don't need to be televised on television. Now, here's the second thing. And I realize that it involves the college football playoff. And I understand that, according to some news that came out on ESPN over the weekend, that the folks behind the college football playoff are not going to adjust it until at least 2024. I wish they would, because I'll tell you, if this college football season proved anything, there were a lot of teams that were worthy of being in those top 4 slots, just the way things worked out in the season. But here's my thought. Expand the college football playoff to 16 teams and use the existing bowl system, just like you are with the semifinals as part of the New Year's Six Bowls. You rotate. Use the existing bowl structure to do the games. Here's how you do it. You start with 16 teams. You play 8 games the first weekend, 2 at a time. One game could be on ESPN, the other on ESPN2. That way it gives viewers choice. Following weekend, following Saturday, those teams move on to the next round, which would be 4 teams, 4 games. Then you have the 2 games that you currently have on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, and then, of course, the finals, which I would suggest you do immediately after. So my bottom line is you use the existing bowl structure, so you go 8-4-2-1. It could be done in a 4-week period. It could be done on consecutive Saturdays. I'm sure that the NFL will not mind not having Saturday afternoon games, which usually are not great anyway, so you make the games count with great college football games. And you can do it immediately after the regular season. Why wait 2 weeks to do it? Get it on, you know, right after the regular season of college football. You have 8 games, like I said, 2 games at a time period, or you do 3-3-2. You have 2 games running at noon Eastern time, 2 games at 3:30, 2 games at 7, 2 games at 10:30. If you don't want to use the 10:30 time period, so you go 3-3-2. 3 at noon, 3 at 3:30, 2 at 7:30. And I think it makes it a much more exciting matchup, at least that first weekend. And then you can do, you know, the 4-2-1. And you can get the games done shortly after New Year's. I think it's a marvelous format. You get more teams in, more quality teams in, better, showcase for conferences, both the top conferences as well as that group of 5, which Cincinnati is part of, American Athletic Conference. Why not? So those are my two ideas to build back bowls better. College football bowl games. Number one, start next year. Eight teams must qualify. Eight teams, you get eight games. You win eight games, you're in. No eight games, you're out. And then later on, make that four-team playoff into a 16-team playoff. Go over four weekends, four Saturdays. You make it work, and I think it would really be great for the viewer and great for college football. What do you think? Love to hear from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Love to hear what you think. You also find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. So I'd love to hear what you think about college football. Do you have an idea of your own to make the bowl games better? I'd love to hear. So, you know, let me know. And we'll keep you posted on what happens. And now, time for Up as an Update. It's our regular feature where we update stories and topics we featured on recent episodes. 2 months ago, we were one of the few places, whether print or broadcast, that had the news that former President Donald Trump was going to launch a new company, Trump Media and Technology Group, to launch a new mega content service, among other things, a Netflix-like service that would be a subscription service. You pay every month for the opportunity to use the service, and the service would present original programming, entertainment, news, documentary, sports, et cetera, on a monthly basis. And that they had hired Scott St. John, the executive producer of Deal or No Deal, America's Got Talent, other game shows, to be the overseer of the project. We also told you at the time that TMTG was going to get off the ground through merging with an organization, a SPAC, that's a special purpose acquisition company, called Digital World Acquisition Company, and that they would today actually merge. Well, that merger was supposed to take place today. It may have, in fact, already have taken place. However, over the weekend and earlier today, The Hollywood Reporter and some other publications came out with more news about TMTG+. Here's the first. The Digital World Acquisition Corp. raised over the weekend $1 billion, that's B as in billion dollars, for Trump Media Technology Group, TMTG and TMTG+. Secondly, that in a new investor presentation, TMTG+ had a few interesting things to say. One, that people would pay a monthly fee, for sure, to get the service. They predicted that 10 million paying customers would be theirs within the first couple of years, and that by 2026, they would have 40 million users. They did not say in the presentation whether or not ad support would be factored in to the service. It also, by the way, acknowledged the fact that Scott St. John was going to be the overseer of this venture, and that they were going to deal with news, documentary, sports, and what's being called non-woke, W-O-K-E, entertainment. However, The Hollywood Reporter also reported today that along the way, Digital World Acquisition Company and TMTG have been approached by the Securities and Exchange Commission, who wants to investigate how the structure of the service is happening. And it should be pointed out, in the case of the SEC, that before Trump Media Technology Group was formed, the Digital World had received this investigation inquiry from the SEC. Also, both organizations have been also approached by another federal agency for information. It should be pointed out, according to the Hollywood Reporter this morning, that both Digital World Acquisition Company and Trump Media Technology Group both are complying with the SEC's wants, as well as this other organization's wants, and so far, no issues. It's going to be very interesting to see whether the SEC tries to block this venture, as well as a social media venture called Truth Social that former President Trump is trying to form through this new company. We'll obviously keep you posted on the situation. We've already contacted TMTG. They know we're out there. And as soon as we can get the go-ahead, we would love to have Scott St. John on this program. He's been on the program before involving other TV projects, including Monopoly Millionaires Club, which he was the executive producer on, as well as the Vise of Deal No Deal and Card Sharks on the shows. Scott's a great guest, and we hope to have him on as soon as we can get the clearance from TMTG's press and public relations people. So that's where we stand with Trump Media Technology Group. And again, we'll keep you posted about how things are going. Well, that will do it for this edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Oh, before we go, I do want to say, if you had read our Facebook and Twitter post this morning, we were hoping to have also on this program Jane Root, the former Discovery executive who has run her own company for the last couple of years called Newtopia. And one more time, is getting involved with Will Smith on a new TV project called Welcome to Earth. She was involved with a former project called One Strange Rock, ran 2 seasons on National Geographic Channel. And on Wednesday, Disney Plus will be launching Smith's new episodic venture called Welcome to Earth. Jane is one of the executive producers of the show. We were hoping to have her on today. However, we found out a little late in the game that as we speak, she has a special meeting that she has to go to, which is going to wrap up at 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1 p.m. Pacific. So we're trying to reschedule it for our episode on Friday or for one of our episodes next week. We'll keep you posted. So that's why Jane was not on today and gave us the opportunity to do fill in some of the time, at least, with our classic trivia question of the week, our up segment, and the news about my commentary, Build Back College Bowls Better. All right? So hopefully Jane will be on either Friday or sometime next week. We will keep you posted. Again, I want to thank Justin Halpern and Patrick Schumacher from Abbott Elementary, the executive producer of that show, with the creator and star, Keena Brunson. Remember, Abbott Elementary starts tomorrow night, 9:30 Eastern Pacific Time on ABC, and then goes in for a regular run on Tuesday, January 4th, 1/2 hour earlier, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, right before the final season episodes of Black-ish continue. Don't forget, coming up on our show Friday, we'll have among our guests Dr. Lucio Burbank. She is the Kid Bid Specialist and the author of the new book, The Inside Secrets of Sesame Street. If you came in late on today's program or want to catch up on episodes you missed, make it very easy for you. Just go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And remember, you can always check out our podcast. All of our episodes from this year are on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, and many of our episodes are also on Apple Podcasts, where we have a 4 out of 5 star rating. Also, we are on Verbal, Reason, and on Amazon Music as well. Always love to hear from you, so let us know what you think about our shows, and what's your thoughts for where TV is at and where it is going. We'd love to hear from you, so email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your mailing address. Remember, that's how you get involved in our classic TV question of the week. One more time, here's the question. Raymond Burr was the first actor to play Legal Eagle Perry Mason on a CBS series. Who was the second? 4 prizes could come your way in time for the holiday season if you know the correct answer. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Remember, you can also check out that wonderful email if you have an idea for our ongoing feature or show to know. Is there a TV series you like that doesn't get enough attention? Well, we want to give it that attention, but we need to hear from you. And if we use your suggestion on the air, you, of course, get the credit. So, again, it's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Oh, one more thing. You know, I write for Media Village, the media leadership website, and I just posted a column this morning about buried treasures on YouTube. YouTube has become a great repository for classic television, some of the best TV series ever made that only lasted, for whatever the reason, a year or two on the air. I'm talking about shows like East Side, West Side, the powerful 1960s drama starring George C. Scott as an anti-hero social worker here in New York City, Flattery's People, Richard Crenna for The Real McCoy stars as a state legislator, The Lieutenant, Gary Lockwood of 2001 A Space Odyssey, in a series that was put together by Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek, his first television series ever, and Sam Benedict, starring Evan O'Brien, Oscar-winning actor from the Benford Contessa, as a flamboyant lawyer based on the real-life career of San Francisco attorney Jake Ehrlich. That's all in MediaVillage.com. MediaVillage.com, check it out. Love to hear what you think. And as always, we do appreciate what you have to say. I do respond to your emails or your chat action on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook within 24 hours. Why? Because, as always, what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. Jay Soderberg is head of content. Website maintenance is provided by PodSite, the Internet's new podcast destination. For more, go to podsite.io. Podsite.io. Our web coordinator is guitarist Vegas. Wannabe Televised was brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world, makes a great holiday gift for you or someone you love. For all details, go to audibletrial.com/televised. And remember, if you want to forego the 1 month trial and just subscribe, whether you're an Amazon Prime member or not, you will get your first 3 months of subscription for $5.95 a month plus a $20 credit. All available to you through audibletrial.com/televised. For tomorrow be televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your week. We are back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio, the iRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal, and Reason. whatever you're up to between now and then, please make it a safe and great deal. If you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor. Check your medical history and your medical records. And then do your due diligence and make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.